This is Claire Gunner with a commentary on pages 314 to 317 of Sandra Cisneros' Caramello. This passage is part of a series of chapters that are told not only by Celaya, but also specifically about Celaya, in relation to her family and its history. The bulk of the text narrates the lives of many other characters, whose stories must be understood to understand the narrator, but this passage reveals more directly the impact that at least three elements of the novel have had on Celaya's perspective: interpersonal relationships, most importantly with the awful grandmother and her father Inocencio, the emotional burden she bears as storyteller, and the Mexican-American cultural dichotomy, at times harmonious, at others conflicting. The two external characters most important to this passage are Inocencio and Soledad. Celaya clearly feels a strong emotional connection to her father Inocencio, who has made no effort to conceal the fact that she is his favourite child. Toward the end of the novel, Celaya also realizes that she has become the awful grandmother, most likely from revisiting and examining Soledad's personal history, an exercise which logically both inspires and requires compassion. From her father, Celaya has inherited a brooding and complicated sadness. In chapter 43, El Sufrido, the novel describes the young Inocencio as a daydreamer, a boy who was never happy unless he was sad. According to Zoila, Celaya is the same. Inocencio was simply a boy without the words for what he was feeling, someone who felt most comfortable in the company of his own thoughts. In this excerpt, Celaya names her experience of the sadness she shares with her father, the Funkadelics, without explicitly acknowledging its commonality. Sadness suits Celaya, and was made for her. Sadness is specific to Celaya in much the same way that it characterizes Inocencio. She also revels in it, allowing herself to become waterlogged by it, sodden and soggy. Sadness even becomes a form of nourishment to Celaya, savoured the way some people savour good food. The ocean hungry to lap you up not only references the image of Candelaria disappearing in the Acapulco water on page 78, and the subsequent realisation of her relationship to Celaya and Inocencio, but also establishes a similar sensory parallel. Number 21 on the list of discussion questions for Caramello asks if taste is the most powerful sense that Cisneros' imagery evokes, given her propensity to vividly describe food and its associated aromas and pungencies. Food imagery is evidently central to the novel, as taste permeates metaphors like these two that have little to do with physical nourishment. The domination of taste and food-related metaphors may also support a notion of culture sustained not only by a specific culinary tradition, but by emotional turmoil, shared suffering and triumph, reflected by the telenovelas and fotonovelas of which Soledad is so fond. What sustains us, according to Caramello, is the joy and pain of knowing one is alive. To be numb, to not taste, is to cease existing. Celaya's relationship with and to the awful grandmother is also reflected in the passage. Throughout the novel, Soledad's Caramello Reboso is emblematic of the unrelenting continuity of the family's history, a history that is being recounted before it has finished by a narrator who invents much of what she does not know. Celaya crochets when she is anxious, just as Soledad unconsciously ties and unties knots in the unfinished edge of the Reboso. Celaya describes herself as a sadness of white string after the Garcia Lorca poem, full of tiny knots that have come to symbolize not only the twists of fate, or destino, that fall upon the Reyes family, but also the personal conflict endured by the novel's major characters: Narciso's heartbreak at the hands of Exaltacion, Inocencio's first daughter and Zoila's jealousy, Celaya's desire for a solitude that will satisfy her vague and empty longing. Celaya has also inherited the burden of the storyteller. The knots in the white string, in the Reboso, and in the story reflect the immensity of the task of the narrator. Celaya has inherited a tangle of events of which she must make sense. The burden of telling the family's story is also a burden of truth, a matter further complicated by the cultural tradition of telling healthy lies that create additional knots in the Reyes history. In this passage, healthy lies are represented both by the house in San Antonio and by Celaya's selective storytelling. Nothing's the way Father said, she states on page 314, referencing the excitement of Inocencio and the awful grandmother upon buying the house and describing it to the rest of the family with something like the optimism of realtors. On page 316, we find out that the house gives Celaya the creeps, like it's haunted or something. But she doesn't tell Father the truth. How can she tell him that when he's so happy? What is healthy about Celaya's decision to conceal her true feelings from Inocencio? According to the novel, is the point of a healthy lie to preserve the teller or the listener? It may be that the truth is concealed from Inocencio's view, but within the private confines of personal monologue, Celaya can be honest. To tell the truth, She says on page 315, "Nobody knows what I want, and I hardly know myself." The list that follows, a lock on my door, a room, a bed, quiet to be in love, is similarly conflicted, signalling Celia's secret desire for solitude and genuine companionship at the same time. The brooding sadness she shares with Inocencio makes up the part of Celia that yearns for space and time to contemplate. Like her father before her, she needs a quiet space to think until that smudge of emotion clarifies itself. At the same time, her desire to be in love, for somebody who will listen to her troubles, ties Celia to her grandmother, whose name means solitude, and who spent much of her early life before Narciso feeling desperately alone, and who clung to Inocencio when Narciso distanced himself from her. This passage, which grants the reader entry into Celia's personal struggle, is unique in a novel comprised of chapters dedicated to the narration of external melodrama. A few questions to consider. In what ways could Celia's conflicted feelings mirror the Mexican-American cultural misalignment? How else does the cultural conflict manifest itself in the book? And in what ways is the dichotomy harmonious rather than dissonant?